Welcome to Book Bistro, where book enthusiasts come to chat about the books they love in a warm and supportive environment. Today is Thursday, March 14th, 2024. This is Shannon, and today I'm here with Brooke and Natalia, and we are discussing books that feature family secrets. And there are so many of these. I think Natalia gave me like a list of like 10 or 12 that she was thinking of using. So I'm anxious to see what you decide to use. But we will be doing some thrillers, some romance, even some nonfiction, some young adult. So we've got all kinds of good stuff here for you. So we will get started with the usual housekeeping information. Then I will start us off, followed by Brooke. And just because I felt like having a little blast from the past, I'm putting Natalia back at the end. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Book Bistro Podcast. There we have our usual Facebook page where we keep track of our Wednesday reads and also post information about the Friday episodes. We also have a Facebook listener group that you're welcome to join. And if you prefer a different type of listener group, you can contact us and ask about our WhatsApp group. Both groups are pretty small, not super high traffic, and we would love to have you. If you want to get in touch with us off of social media, you can do so by sending an email to thebookbistropodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for our main hosting page, where you can find information on the podcatchers that make Book Bistro available to you, you can find that information in our show notes. So my first book today kind of takes this in a totally different direction from what I was first thinking when I came up with this episode idea. So this is In the Pines, A Lynching, A Lie, A Reckoning by Grace Elizabeth Hale. This is part memoir and part sort of family history, social history. Grace Hale is a scholar, and she delves a lot into social justice and kind of the ways in which people have chosen to rewrite history. And in this book, she turns to some things that she learned about her own family back in 1947, when her grandfather was the sheriff in a small Mississippi town. It's in South Central Mississippi. And he was this kind of larger than life person for Grace. And all of her life, you know, she heard this story about how he prevented a lynch mob from killing a Black man who was in his jail on suspicion of raping a white woman. And something about that, as she grew up, just didn't ring true, especially since when she was in college, she learned that after this lynch mob was supposedly prevented from killing him, the suspect ended up dying the next day during an escape attempt.
Oh.
And yeah. So she kind of feels like, you know, there's something that's not quite right about this. Maybe she doesn't have all the facts. So she starts digging in to not only the history of her family, but also the history of the town, and really exploring lynchings in, you know, the 40s and 50s and how all of this happened. And what she ended up learning is that her grandfather was not the hero of the story that, you know, he was always portrayed to be. And at first, of course, you know, she has a hard time to, you know, to believe this. She's feeling a little bit betrayed, like, you know, her family lied to her. But like, what if they didn't? She said, you know, what if like the story that they're telling is actually the truth? And so she gets a fellowship through Carnegie and is able to really devote all of her time to digging into what happened to Versi Johnson, who is the man who died in her grandfather's custody. And I'm not going to tell you what she learns, but it is definitely the opposite of what she was always told. And it really calls into question like her relationship with her family, her trust in, like her family's history, the stories that have been passed down, and forces her to re-examine her relationship with her grandfather. But it also brings to light a troubling part of American history, which is, the huge amount of lynchings that went on, especially in the Jim Crow South. So this is definitely a hard book to read. She doesn't shy away from some of the uglier aspects of things that happened during this time. But I think it is a really important history, especially for those of us who are struggling to understand our own, kind of family's place in American history and, what side of history our family was on. So this is In the Pines, A Lynching, A Lie, A Reckoning by Grace Elizabeth Hale.
It sounded really interesting. I could definitely see it being a really tough read.
Yeah, it was in some places, and it made me think a lot about like my grandparents who grew up in the South, during like 30s and 40s, and kind of made me wonder like what they knew about things like this. Unfortunately,
Right.
both of them are gone now, so I can't ask, but it did, kind of make me wonder about that.
So my first book today is The Bright Spot, Sunrise Cove, Book 5 by Jill Shelves. And our main character's name is Luna. And Luna was adopted and knew no knows nothing about her biological family. When we meet her, she's working on a farm that has there's like an orchard, and there's also a bunch of like different rescue animals, including an adorable goat who runs around wearing pajamas. So I love it. And so Luna's trying to run this farm for a man named Cyrus. And her and the staff, they very kind of quietly call him Scrooge because he tends to be kind of against different things they want to do, and he kind of holds back all the money and stuff like that, or that's as far as they understand anyway. So Luna finds out that Cyrus has passed away, and in his will, he has left the farm to her as well as to his money manager named Jameson. And Jameson is a man who Cyrus helped to raise. Jameson didn't have the greatest family life, so Cyrus really took him under his wing. So at first, when Luna and Jameson get like to know each other, they really don't like each other. Luna's got all these ideas of what she wants to do for the farm, and Jameson, being like the money man, he knows kind of what's happening in the background. And there's some things with the farm finances that Luna's not aware of. And this makes it really, really uncomfortable for Jameson because he knows that the farm is not doing well. And he also knows a family secret that Cyrus has that's going to affect Luna. So Luna is trying to figure everything out. Meanwhile, Jameson's trying to kind of bring her all in. And so they decide that to try and save the farm, because Luna feels really responsible for all her staff members, she's made kind of her own little family on this farm. And all the different people are so interesting. There's Willow, her best friend, and we get to see her and her former husband rekindle their relationship. We get to meet an older woman. She kind of sees her as her grandmother, and she's kind of a little bit eccentric. She likes to read your cards, read your tea leaves. She dresses a little bit different, and she's pretty interesting. And then we've got some other interesting characters. And so they're trying to figure out how to increase visits and also how to best increase like the prices of what they charge while also making sure that people can enjoy it. And this is kind of the biggest struggle that Luna and Jameson are having, because Jameson knows the truth of how the farm is struggling, and Luna, she doesn't want to let anybody down. So they work hard together, and through the book, we get to watch a relationship kindle between Luna and Jameson. And then we also get to see how this family secret that Cyrus has, how it comes out, and how it creates some difficulties for Luna, and also between Luna and Jameson, because Jameson knew. I really enjoy her books. This is the fifth book I've read of Jill Shalvez. And if you want a book that's kind of comforting, but also has a lot of depth and some really interesting characters, then I would definitely check out the Sunrise Cove series. You don't have to read them in order, not even if Natalia says you do. it all's kind of set in the same place, so Sunrise Cove, but all of the different books are based on different characters. So far, I haven't noticed any characters that come up on each book, so I don't even know if any if we'll even see other characters from other books. But this is The Bright Spot, Sunrise Cove, Book 5, and it's by Jill Chavez.
And I told Brooke before we started recording that she was not allowed to make her goats wear pajamas. I don't know, you know, if she will take heed, but I did tell her. And I'm sure her husband told her too.
Family secrets, such a lovely subject and one of my favorites ever, and so hard to recommend good books about this subject without spoiling the plots that make the books so divine. Well, my first book for today is one of my all-time favorites, Big Little Lies by Leanne Moriarty, and it is one of those books that I read in one sitting. And well, this is a book where it begins with someone dead. Now, we don't know who's dead, but we know that someone's dead after some kind of school event. So, well, is it parents behaving badly? A murder or a tragic accident? I guess we don't know, but this book will make you think about the dangerous lies that we tell ourselves, and is about three very relatable women. Madeline, who is a mom and is a force to be reckoned with. She's funny, she's biting, she's passionate. She remembers every detail of everything, but forgives no one. Then we have Celeste, who is another mom in the town, and she's looks like she's the most beautiful woman, but it seems like she's paying the price for the supposed perfection that she has. And then we have Jane, who is a single mom who is new to town and was also mistaken for the nanny of her son. And, well, she has a mysterious past that everyone wants to figure out. Now, in this story, these three women are at a crossroads. But when this event that we don't know about happens, they are kind of forced to figure out what they're going to do, because they end up in the same place with the same problem. And well, not only is this a great book about family secrets, but it's also a brilliant take on ex-husbands, ex-wives, mothers and daughters, small town and schoolyard scandals, but most importantly, the little lies that can turn lethal. Now, if you want to know more about this book that I'm sure you've heard a lot of, considering that it's also a TV series, which I have not watched, actually, this is Big Little Lies by Leanne Moriarty.
All right. So my second book just came out in February, actually. And this is The Hidden Life of Cecily Larson by Ellen Baker. I was super excited about this one. It was hard for me not to talk about it on our most anticipated releases episode, but there were other things that I wanted to talk about. So this is a dual timeline novel, and we start out in 1924, and then we jump to 2015, and then we also kind of take some forays into like the 30s and 40s as well. But our main emphasis is, you know, between the early part of the 20th century and then 2015. So in 1924, Cecily Larson is 4 years old, and her mother drops her off at a local orphanage. And we don't really know all the reasons why, but she basically says, you know, she can't take care of her right now. She wants this orphanage to keep her. And she promises to return in a year when she says, like, her financial situation will be different and she'll be able to take her back. And so Cecily is in this orphanage and her mother doesn't come back in a year or 2 years or even 3 years. And when Cecily is seven, a man from a traveling circus comes into the orphanage and he wants to buy her. I didn't really think orphanages were supposed to sell children, but, you know, what do I know about these things? So he buys her and he decides that he's going to make her part of the circus. And she's going to be eventually a bareback rider. They decide that she is the little sister of Isabel, who is one of the star performers in the circus and obviously is no relation to Cecily. But they build up this sort of myth that Cecily and Isabel are sisters and they are these, like, you know, marvelous bareback riding girls. And so for years, Cecily is part of the circus and, you know, she's a little concerned. She's worried that, like, her mom won't be able to find her. But as she gets older, she realizes that most likely, you know, her mom wasn't planning to come back. Now, when Cecily is a teenager, she falls in love with a circus worker and things go wrong. She is cast out of the circus and sent to a home for wayward girls. And that is where I'm going to stop telling you about what happened to Cecily. Now we are jumping ahead to 2015. Cecily is 94. She's living in this big house. Her daughter and her granddaughter and her great-grandson are, you know, part of her life. And everybody thinks, like, things are fine. But her great-grandson is doing a project in school, and it's one of those, like, trace your family's DNA. And, you know, they have four generations of their family that they can trace. And so the great-grandson's, like, really excited about this, and he thinks this is going to be, like, a standout project. But what he doesn't realize is that by testing Cecily's DNA, all these long-held secrets about Cecily's past, not so much about, like, her mother and what, you know, happened to her, like why she was dropped off at the orphanage, but what happened once she was cast out of the circus and who is the actual father of Cecily's daughter. You know, what is the relationship that all these people have? Is it that they're related by blood, like they think? Is it something else? If you want to know, you will have to pick it up. This is a fantastic, like, sweeping family saga. We get to know, you know, some things about the circus, which I really enjoyed. I'm a big fan of historical fiction about circuses. This is described as Before We Were Yours meets Water for Elephants. And I would agree with that. I think it kind of touches on themes explored by both of those books. This is the first book by Ellen Baker that I've ever read, but I will definitely be picking up some other stuff by her because she is a phenomenal writer. So this is The Hidden Life of Cecily Larsen by Ellen Baker.
This is really good.
Yes, it looks amazing.
So my next book is No Time for Goodbye, No Time for Goodbye, Book One by Linwood Barclay. So our main character's name is Cynthia. And when Cynthia was 14 years old, she woke up one morning all kind of nervous about what her parents were going to say because she had been out drinking the night before and had a pretty explosive argument with her father. And the last thing that she had told him is, "I wish you were dead." So she wakes up the following morning and everyone is gone. Her mom, her dad, and her brother are missing. At first, she doesn't know if she's thinking, "Oh, well, they probably were like angry enough that they just took off to work and like didn't want to wake me up because they didn't want to deal with me." So she goes off to school, and one of her brother's friends comes up during the day and asks her like where her brother is. And she's like, "I don't know. I thought my parents dropped Todd off early, so I'm not really sure." And so she starts worrying. And as the day goes on, she realizes that something is not right. So she goes home, and still, there's nobody there. Nothing has changed from when she left. So she calls the police, and they start investigating. Now we fast forward about 20, 25 years. I can't remember the exact number. And Cynthia now has her family of her own. She's married to a man named Terry, who is a teacher at a high school. They have a young daughter named Grace. And Cynthia is still struggling with the loss of her family. She has, like, there's been no clues as to what has happened. And she's still struggling. Like, she has a lot of trouble letting Grace have any independence. Like at one point, Grace talks to her father and says, like, "Other kids my age are walking to school on their own, but mom will not let me. She has to walk me right up to the door and like make sure that I'm home. I don't want to be treated like a baby anymore." So Terry has to talk to Cynthia about like letting go of Grace a little bit. And as this discussion is happening, Cynthia tells him that she has started to see a suspicious vehicle around, and it's making her nervous. And she's worried about letting Grace go out on her own because what if this vehicle and this person like steals her, kidnaps her? Terry's not really sure what to think. He hasn't seen any suspicious vehicles, and he feels like Cynthia is going overboard on everything. Well, time goes on, and then all of a sudden, they find this random hat on their dining room table. And Cynthia is like shocked because this is like the same kind of hat that her father wore. So she thinks that her father must have come and left his hat to let her know that he's still alive. And Terry's like, "I don't know, like, are you sure? Like, that's not possible." And she's like, "Well, he always wrote SC, his name was Clayton, in the rim." And so he turns over the hat and he looks and he's like, "Huh, there's a C." So he doesn't know what to think. So they call the police, and the police come and they're laughing. They think this is dumb, like, so somebody breaks into your house, steals nothing, and just leaves a hat. Like, they're pretty much telling her, like, "You're losing it, lady." So they go off, and she keeps the hat. She puts it away, and she's just she's really, really unraveling. She's just so nervous, and she starts seeing things, and she's not sure. And, like, Terry himself, he doesn't know what to think. He doesn't know if Cynthia is, like, Is she telling the truth? Is she having a bit of a mental breakdown? Like, what is going on? So Cynthia has had enough and she's really scared. So she takes her and Grace after the night before Terry, her and her had a bit of an argument. And so she takes Grace and they go into hiding. And this like terrifies Terry. He's worried. He doesn't know how, like he's concerned about his wife's mental state. And so starts looking for her. So he remembers little bits and pieces of what has happened over the time, and he gets some help from her old ex-boyfriend from back when she was in high school. And he's like this mafia type guy, and he's quite entertaining. They have quite the interesting banter. He has the police helping them. One thing I did forget to mention is before, kind of what kind of really pushed Cynthia into wanting to go to hide, her aunt who had raised her after her family's disappearance, she is found murdered. And so she's obviously really scared. So as Terry is looking for Cynthia, him and with her ex-boyfriend, they discover some things about her father's background that Cynthia had no idea about. And this is kind of then leads to some ideas of what is going on. And I'm really sorry, but I can't tell you much about it because I don't want to give it in. But as the police are investigating, they find her parents' old car, and there's two bodies in it, just two. One is a woman and one is male, but I'm not going to say who. And like that's all they really know about it. I'm going to leave it at that. I know it was so vague, so kind of weird, but you really got to read this book. It was so interesting. Like some of the things that happen are kind of like, oh, there's no way this could happen. But at the same time, it's so you just got to keep reading because you want to know how it's all going to end. And how it does end is kind of surprising. I wasn't completely, I had an idea that that was going to happen, but I didn't really know until the end. And I was pretty wowed by the end. So this is No Time for Goodbye, No Time for Goodbye, Book One, and it's by Lynwood Barkley. There's a second book in this little series, and I didn't find it overly necessary. So once you read this one, if you really, really feel like you want to, I would do like you might as well. But it definitely, I didn't feel that it was as like it was a great addition just to kind of warn
Yeah,
people.
I don't think it added much to like the overall like story from this book. I read this years ago, and it was my first Lynwood Barkley book, and I've been a big fan of his writing ever since.
In my opinion, there is nothing better for the world and for the knowledge that we need to have about historical events than a fictional account written about a historical event that took place. In fact, I've probably said this many times in the podcast, and I very firmly stand by the fact that if we allowed children to read a fictional account of a true historic event, they would be more interested in said true historic event. And not only that, but they would see the humanity. Or rather, historical events as things that happen to real human beings like they are, and not just dates, facts, and numbers like we often tend to relegate history in our brains. At least that was how it was for me until I grew up and started doing this thing, which is historical fictions and historical accounts that are fictitious of real events which led me personally to be more interested and to learn so much more about things that I never thought I would learn of. Now, you guessed it, the next book I'm talking about is based on a true story, or was inspired by a true story. So this is Before We Were Yours by Lisa Wingate. And this book is actually based on the story of Georgia Tan, who was a director of a Memphis-based, I guess she was a director of an adoption organization, and she kidnapped a bunch of very poor children and sold them into rich families. And when this happened, this was a very notorious scandal. So this story is about Rill, who is supposed to watch her siblings when her father is forced to take their mother, who seems to be in some kind of emergency, to the hospital in Memphis. And this is the year 1939. And it is a very stormy night. And, well, strangers arrive and force them all to vacate where they are. So now the kids are thrown into a children's home. It's a society orphanage, and they're all assured that they will be returned to their parents as soon as possible. But they quickly realize the dark truth. And while they are at the mercy of the facility's cruel director, Rill has to fight to keep her sisters and brother together in a world of danger and uncertainty. And then we have present day Aiken, South Carolina, our heroine who was born into wealth and privilege and seems to have it all, Avery Stafford. She's a federal prosecutor. She's got a handsome fiance and a lavish wedding in the works and a really nice future in the horizon, but she has to return home to help her father with a health crisis, and she has a chance encounter that leads her to ask herself really uncomfortable questions. And, well, it compels her to take a journey through her family's long and hidden history. This is a path that will ultimately drive her to devastation or to redemption. This story shows us that the heart never forgets where we belong.
All right. So my next book is a young adult contemporary. This is The Silence That Binds Us by Joanna Ho. And this one had been sitting on my iPad for quite a while, and I'd been hearing so many great things about it. And finally, about a month ago, I decided to read it, and I am so glad I did. So this is about Maybelline Chen, and she really wants her parents to be proud of her. But when, like, asked about it, her mom can't come up with really one thing about May that she's proud of. And this is really, really crushing. And all May can think is that, you know, she's not a good enough, like, Chinese, Taiwanese American, and that, you know, all the things that she's been trying to do in school, in her personal life, like, she just feels like she's not good enough. Now, she has an older brother named Danny, and he's sort of like the shining star, the golden child. He just got accepted into Princeton. He gets really good grades. Her parents are always, like, gushing about him. But what nobody knows is that Danny has been suffering from depression. And that's not a spoiler to tell you that. So he ends up committing suicide. And the story really focuses on the aftermath of his death, because suddenly so much attention is put on May and her family. And people are coming up with all these, like, wild theories about why he died. And they're blaming her parents. They're starting to talk about people who come to this country from Asia and put unrealistic expectations on their children, and then supposedly, like, make it harder for white kids. And there's this whole thing that, you know, is, like, racist and terrible that is, you know, kind of brought into the spotlight after Danny's death. And May is reeling from the death and also from this huge reaction that her community is having. And she doesn't really know where her focus should be. Like, should she be focused on grieving for Danny and understanding, like, why he did what he did? Or should she be speaking out against what all these people are saying about her family and other families like them? And so she kind of decides to do both, and it doesn't always work the way she hopes it will. She does do some digging into Danny's past and learn some things that obviously I'm not, going to tell you about, that kind of give her somewhat of an understanding of why he did what he did. But she also does start to write these editorial comments to her local newspaper and really lays out, what her family is going through and who her family, who her family is as a group of people, not just as sort of an Asian stereotype. So this is a story about finding your voice and controlling the narrative, but it's also about really understanding so much about the people we live with, like feeling like she knew her brothers so intimately, and yet still he was having secret struggles that she and her parents knew nothing about. So it's a story of secrets and relationships and self-empowerment. I loved it a lot. It is The Silence That Binds Us by Joanna Ho.
That sounds like a really good book. I'm definitely going to
It
be adding
is.
it to my TBR. I'm
Yeah,
sorry
I
for
think
my
you'll
tip.
like it.
So my next book is I Flipping Love You, Shacking Up, Book Three by Helena Hunting. So our main character's name is Ryan. So it's Ryan with an I. And she goes to the grocery store. This is where we first see her. And at the grocery store, she is shopping. She's in the cereal aisle, and then this hot guy comes up and starts yelling at her about his car. And she's like, I have no idea what you're talking about, crazy, sexy guy. So he keeps talking to her, and then her twin sister comes walking up behind her, and Marley's like, oh my goodness, because she actually knows what's going on. And so she's like, Ryan, we gotta go. So they run out of the store, and as they're getting to their vehicle, because they want to go take off, and she also wants Marley to let her know what is it, what's going on. She realizes that she forgot her purse in the cart. So she's got to run back. So she goes to go back, and then she realizes that the guy, who we find out his name is Pierce, is standing by the vehicle with her purse in his hands. And so she has to go talk to him. So she starts talking to him, and she learns that her sister had backed into his very expensive Tesla, and
Whoops.
made this gigantic scratch on his bumper, and he's pretty upset about it. And she's like thinking in her head, like, this sucks, like we don't have a lot of money to be wasting on people's expensive repairs, but we also can't be ignoring it. So she's like, okay, well, what do you want from me? And he's like, well, I want payment for the repairs. So Pierce just wants them to pay for the payments. But he finds Ryan kind of interesting. So he asks for her phone number and says, I will send you some quotes. So later on, she gets a text from him, and he sends some quotes along, and he tells her, it looks like it's going to be like $3,000 for this repair. And she knows that they don't have a lot. But he had made some comments about her chest that she felt were offensive. So she's decided that she's going to try and bargain to get him to bring the repair prices down. So they have this really interesting little discussion about what she feels that they should pay. And then he tells her, okay, well, why don't we discuss this over dinner? And so she's like, I don't know. But she agrees to go to coffee. And that's what they do. They go to coffee, and there's this whole discussions over this. She's really worried about covering the payment. So her and her sister Marley, they help to buy and sell properties in the Hamptons. So they work with a lot of rich people. Back when Ryan and Marley were younger, their family was quite well off. But something happened. Their parents did something that really caused a lot of problems for Ryan and Marley. And also, they did some really bad things to other people. And I know I'm being vague, but I don't want to give it away. But Marley and Ryan were raised by their grandmother, who lived in a mansion on the beach in the Hamptons, kind of where they buy and sell for a lot of these people. So their biggest dream is to someday be able to afford to flip a house, then and work their way up to being able to afford to buy back this mansion that their grandmother used to own. So when this whole family problem had gone down, her parents took some money from selling their family home and then took off and disappeared. So like nobody knows where their parents are and left them with all this like bad reputation. So the community kind of looks down on them, and also with all this debt. So they had to sell the mansion, and it's kind of like never been purchased again. And it's been kind of falling into ruins. So they know that there's a lot of repairs needed to be done, but Ryan really, really wants to buy this and to turn it into a bed and breakfast. She thinks it would be perfect and that it would be great to have her family, like her grandma, for her grandma. She wants to get this place. So she goes and they're kind of working, and then they get to see Pierce again. He has some issues of his own. There was a he is a patent lawyer, and he made a mistake on a pa patent for a product that his family sells, and which then caused some big uproar because the product was being used in a way that doesn't really look great for their image. And so Pierce and Ryan kind of each have their reasons for not wanting to kind of get to know people and why they're kind of hiding. And so they're doing their thing, and she's seeing him a lot, and she realizes that him and his brother Lawson are also kind of buying and selling places. They've been doing a lot of flipping. And Pierce loves it. He's loving this whole fixing up things. So he's also trying to decide if he even wants to go back to law when things kind of quiet down. And so he's working away, trying to make a name for himself, so that way when he approaches his father and says that he doesn't want to go back to law, that he has kind of a backing for it. And in their interactions, Ryan and her sister and Pierce and his brother, they're also competing for houses. So there's houses that each of them want, and often Lawson and Pierce get them because they've just got the money. So finally, they're able to the girls, they make a really good sale, and they're able to purchase a somewhat rundown house, but they feel that they can do it. So Pierce offers to help them fix up stuff by connecting them with some of his tradesmen, and they work together. But then there's some little like difficulties here and there. And also Ryan's worried about Pierce learning about her family's background because she's worried like anytime she's ever kind of disclosed, then people just completely walk away because they don't want anything to do with that kind of bad business. So I'm going to leave it there, but I really, really enjoyed this series. Like all the books, I would definitely read the series in order because you will see different characters from the different books. But They're always entertaining. Like, I love Helena Hunting's humor, and also her characters have heart, and they all kind of have this great backstory. So this is I Flipping Love You, Shacking Up, Book Three, and it's by Helena Hunting.
This looks fun.
So my last book of tonight was a very difficult choice to make because I feel that this author writes family secrets like no one else. And her books are all so poignant. I've really enjoyed every word that she's put to the page that I have read so far. But for some reason, this book, while stellar, seems to be quite obscure when the rest of her books are mentioned. Now, this is The Secret Life of Cece Wilkes by Diane Chamberlain. And this book is about Genevieve Russell, who was pregnant and disappears in 1977. Now, 20 years later, her remains are discovered, and someone named Timothy Gleason is charged with her murder. But the caveat, there's no sign of her unborn child. And well, Cece Wilkes knows how Genevieve Russell died because she was there. And she also knows what happened to the missing infant, as 2 decades ago, she made the devastating choice to raise the baby as her own. Now, Timothy Gleason is facing the death penalty, and Cece has another choice to make: tell the truth and destroy her family, or let an innocent man die in order to protect her family and her lies. What will she choose? I guess you'll have to read The Secret Life of Cece Wilkes by Diane Chamberlain to find out. And man, what a ride this book was. So relatable, so amazing. Edge of my seat, suspenseful in the way you want these books to be suspenseful. Not really a mystery, but more like, oh my goodness, what is going to happen next? And very many moments where I couldn't believe what I was reading. And also, I couldn't believe that I was relating to certain characters that made certain choices. Please, please pick it up as soon as you can. You will not be disappointed.
So my last book is a young adult thriller, and this is Last Girl Breathing by Court Stevens. So this is about Lucy. She's almost ready to graduate from high school. She competes in a sport that I didn't even know was a thing, and it has to do with shooting air rifles. And
What's
she
it called?
wants to, I don't know, it doesn't really, they just call
No,
it,
okay.
they just say she's competing in an air rifle competition.
Interesting.
Yeah. So she shoots air rifles and is apparently really good at this. So good, in fact, that she wants to compete in the Olympics on this air rifle team, which again, I did not know was a thing. But she's been working really hard at this, like for years and years, and she finally feels like now is going to be her time. But then her stepbrother goes missing. And, you know, this is weird in and of itself, because whenever somebody goes missing, like that's bad. But it's also weird because this is right before his most important football game. And she feels like, you know, whatever's going on, he wouldn't have missed the football game. So this whole investigation gets started and it kind of like takes over the whole town. You know, everybody gets involved. And soon they turn their attention to this plot of land that was the scene of a terrible, terrible tragedy 8 years ago. Lucy was camping there with her family and a group of Boy Scouts, and the rain was just falling like in torrents, and a dam broke, and like chaos ensued, and some lives were lost. One of those lives being that of her younger brother. And so now, with her stepbrother missing, the police are looking back at this plot of land, and this makes Lucy very, very uneasy. And at first, as the reader, like you don't know why she's uneasy. You know obviously that this brings up some painful memories for her, but you don't fully understand like the extent of what she's going through. But then the missing person investigation turns into a murder investigation because her stepbrother is found dead and someone else is found dead alongside him. And so now people are like looking at everyone with any connection to this family. And now Lucy is very, very nervous. Her boyfriend seems like he might be the prime suspect. And, Lucy is pretty sure like he didn't have anything to do with this. But what if she's wrong? And what if some secrets that she and her family have been keeping for years, what if these are somehow connected to this current murder investigation? This is a very complicated, twisty book. The characters all have these intertwining lives. And so it can be at first kind of confusing to figure out like how each person relates to the other people in the story, because it's like everybody has these multiple connections to all these people, and you just kind of like look at it and like, wait, now who is this person? Like, how are they related? But that kind of web of relationships is really what drives this story forward. And soon you find out that Lucy's family, like they're not the only ones keeping secrets. Other people are keeping secrets too. So if you want to know how this turns out, I would highly recommend that you pick this up. This is Last Girl Breathing by Court Stevens.
I am definitely going to read this.
Yes.
So my final book is The Unquiet Bones by Loreth Ann White. So our main character's name is Jane, and Jane is a detective who's currently working out of the cold case unit. She is pregnant, and her fiance went missing. And nobody's been able to find him. And she's grieving because she's not only pregnant and he didn't know that she was pregnant, but also she's grieving the lot his loss because she doesn't really think that he'll ever be found. So she's called out to a job site. This old chapel is being torn down. And while this was happening, a woman's leg that was inside
Ooh.
a boot is found. So she goes out to the spot of this discovery and she talks to Ella Quinn, the forensic investigator, about what has been found. And they discover that it's the body of a woman. And as Jane looks into what could have happened in a spot, she learns that a young woman disappeared about almost 50 years ago. So she's wondering if this might be the body of Annalise Jansen. And she's hoping that if it is, that it will bring some closure to her family. Well, this, as the time goes on, they discover that it is Annalise. And then her friends, who used to be called the Shoreview Six, they start getting nervous because back around the time when Annalise went missing, a pledge was made between some of the members. And as the book goes on, we learn the connections between the different characters. They're all like kind of in good jobs and great families. And they all don't want to lose their status. And as the investigation goes on, things start to crumble and they start turning on one another. And we start to learn about Annalise's connection between each of them. She was dating one of them. She was kind of like fooling around with another one. One of the women was very jealous of her.
Ooh.
She was having some difficulties at home, which is where we learn about that there is a secret that was happening behind the doors of her family home. And we really don't learn this secret until near the end of the book, but it was definitely quite the shocker. You really don't, at least I didn't have any feeling that this was the situation until it what came a light, and then you kind of like, huh, that makes sense, because you realize there was little clues here and there all the way through.
Ah,
And
yes.
yeah, so this, I really enjoyed this book. I loved the interactions between Jane and the different characters. It was really interesting to see like how she was dealing with some of the things she was dealing with. And in her situation, we didn't really get any, like, there's some things that we didn't get any wrap up in. So I'm kind of wondering if there's going to be like another book that will come alongside this one. Yeah, I'm kind of wondering.
Laura Than White does write some series, so.
Well, if this would actually make a great series. There were a lot of characters, so sometimes you kind of had to take a moment to think, because sometimes they were talked about like as their first names, sometimes they were referred to as their last names, and sometimes as like an alias. So it kind of made it a little bit tricky at times to figure out who you were, who was being talked about. But I enjoyed this book a lot. This is The Unquiet Bones, and it's by Laura Than White.
I really like her. I read my first book by her in like 2015, and I just think she is definitely an author who needs a lot more attention. So this is my lucky week because Natalia had only prepared three books for this episode, which means that I get to do a fifth one. There were so many great books to talk about. I am very excited to get another chance. So, my actual last book for this episode now will be one that was written back in February of 2018. Well, not written then, but published then. This is Next Year in Havana, Perez Family, Book One by Chanel Cleeton. And this is Cleeton's debut as far as historical fiction goes. She had written romance before that. And this book marked a bit of a departure for her. This is a dual timeline novel. So the first person we meet is Marisol, and she is a freelance writer who has grown up in Miami. And she's heard stories about her family's Cuban heritage, but she kind of feels disconnected from it. The only person that really talks about it with her is her grandmother, Elisa. And when the book opens, Elisa has died. And Marisol has been asked to take her ashes back to Cuba and spread them. So she does this with kind of a mixture of trepidation and excitement. On one hand, she feels like she'll finally get to see her homeland, but she's also, not really sure what she'll find there. We then go back to 1958, and we see Elisa as a young woman. Her family is pretty prominent in Cuban society, but when revolution strikes, she and her family flee to Florida. Now, Elisa has been dating a revolutionary in secret, and her family, of course, would not be very happy to find this out. And this is a part of her past that once she gets to Florida, she's pretty determined to bury. So the story moves back and forth from kind of present day to 1958 and back again. And we see not only how things unfolded for Elisa, But we see Marisol as she becomes more and more familiar with Cuba and starts to visit some of the places that were important to her grandmother. And as she does this, she finds love, but the guy that she falls for, he has some of his own secrets. And right now, Marisol is kind of feeling like secrets are overwhelming her, so she's not sure that this is the best idea. Not only does she find love, but as I said, she uncovers some truths about her family that she didn't know. And in some ways, these truths kind of change the way she feels about her family, their past, and kind of her relationship to being Cuban American. This is a really, really stunning book, especially when you realize that, this author had not written something like this before. Since then, she has written a bunch of books that sort of chronicle Cuban history and what happened when people fled Cuba at various points. But Next Year in Havana, I feel like really sort of set the stage for her future writing. And she's just incredible in every way. And so I'm so glad that I got a chance to once again tell you about this phenomenal book. It is Next Year in Havana, Perez Family, Book One by Chanel Clayton. All right. So this brings us to the end of this episode on Family Secrets. Thank you so much to Brooke and Natalia for coming up with such great books for this episode. Thanks, as always, goes out to Christine for all of her fantastic editing. And of course, we thank each and every one of you so much for joining us each week as we talk about great books.
If you would like to let us know your thoughts, you can do that by leaving us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or any other platform you use to access the show. And not only does it allow us to see your feedback, but it also helps other book lovers to find us, which is a great thing. So I will be back next Tuesday morning with more bookish fabulousness. And some number of us will be back on Friday with more discussion of great books. Take care, everybody.